to continue on Chav Gimel on the base. Okay, so one of the rules, as we said, in the case of a person suffering from leprosy, is that he has to be poreya, and the other one is he has to be porei. What does porei mean? Porei means that he has to tear his garments and things like that, you know, go around in rags and so on, so that people would know, you know, that this person is a leper. All right, but here is a difference between a man and a woman, right? Namely, that the man has to observe these rules of porei and poreim, whereas the woman is not, right? So, eino right, eino porem, eino poras, eino porem. Okay, so Tana Rabbanan, so again, I mean, why? So the answer is, you have to go back to the text in the Torah itself concerning leprosy. Okay, it says ish. Okay, first of all, there's the word ish. So the Gemara Bina says, ein li elo ish, you mean only a man suffers from leprosy, right? Isha menayin. How do we know that a woman too is subject to rules concerning leprosy, that she also could be considered, you know, a leper? So he says, Kishahu Omer, when we come further on in the passage dealing, you know, with the Torah, so it says over there, the Hatsarua Shebo, and the person who is a leper, in whom we have leprosy, right? So it says, Harekon Shnayim. We have over here actually two different psukim, each dealing with the idea. So in Kain, Matomet Loma, so that's the case. Why should it be so? So he says, Ish, the Inyan Shalamata, Ish Porea. The reason why the word Ish is repeated a second time is because they tell us that this means that although the first Ish means what? That any person who suffers from leprosy is a leper, okay? And has to, let's say, observe the fact of being, you know, let's say, mukhlat, you know, living in seclusion during the time, okay? Right. And of course, subject to the fact that the Kohen has to inspect and everything else, and, you know, before, the person can be declared eligible to come back into the fold again and so on, okay? But why is the word ish repeated again afterwards? So the answer is that the reason is in order to teach us this teaching, namely that the ish poreo poreim, right, that the man has to observe the rules also of keeping the hair uncovered and everything else, and in disarray, and the same thing, the clothing in disarray and so on, right, that the hair, tearing the top of the shirt or something like that, sort of like a kriya, you know. Whereas the woman does not observe that. Okay?
Because it's not modest.
Yeah, exactly. Of course. Then we have a very peculiar din, if you remember, namely, Ha'ish Madir es Beno Benozir, right? The Yain Ha'ish Madir es Beno Benozir. Okay. We had a rule. We learned that a man can say that my son, well, as long as the son is still a minor, he should be a Nozir. Okay? So a man can do that to his minor son. He can't do it to his son once the son is old enough, you know, because then the son is his own balabas, okay? And with Nazirus, normally the rule is, Ish ki afli neder nozir. In other words, you have to specifically take a vow that you're going to undergo the various rules of being a nozir, you know, not to drink wine, and not to eat even grapes or pits and things like that. And that you have to let your hair grow, you're not allowed to be the tabe to a mess.
But that's not a lifetime condition. It can be taken for only a certain period of time.
Normally, Nazirus is 30 days. However, people who want to be extra pious could take upon themselves to observe twice Nazirus, three times Nazirus, four times Nazirus, and so on.
Permanently.
Huh?
Not permanently.
In the case of somebody like Shimshon, so he's a Nazir, you know, all the days of his life. Or Shmuel, his mother also, you see. That is basically a locked question from what we're learning over here.
Right.
But
how old was he?
He was a child when she brought him. He was 3 years old, it says, when she brought him into the.
To
Beis HaMikdash. Yes, Beis HaMikdash. Well, it's the Mishnah. Right. So, but at any rate, as far as the average person is concerned, all right, so a man can make the condition that his younger son will be a nursery, okay, that his young son will be, as long as the son has not attained his majority, but a woman cannot do that, okay? No, okay. More Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan said, how do we know this? So he says, Halacha hi benozi. Now, this is a very interesting concept. When it says Halacha over here, this is short for the phrase Halacha l'mashal m'sinai. Now, what is Halacha l'mashal m'sinai? It means that this is a rule, which is a tradition that goes back ages and ages and ages and ages, even though there's nothing written in the Torah specifically about this. But we observe it because it's halacha l'mashal m'sinai. Okay? So, in this case, we don't have a pasuk that says so. However, Hazei Pirtzak, we have this tradition from ancient times, and this is the tradition of Pirtzak. Of course, in many things that we do, halacha l'mashal m'sinai, you know, is applicable, many things that we do. Well, we know that we have, for example, four parshas in Tefillin, correct? Why do we have four parshas in Tefillin? Because there are four passages in the Torah in which the ruling, you know, shot in the earth, or whatever the variants are. But, you know, it's the general idea, right? But how do we know that the box, for example, has to be black? You understand? How do we know that the straps that we wear have to be black on the outside? The answer is, how lawful am I should see? Yes, a woman can, right.
Then why is it the custom? How could a woman possibly be mothering his son who could be above you?
Hold it. Okay. Because, first of all, we're not talking in general about a neder, okay? A case of a neder, whatever the neder normally would be. But by the way, usually in the Gemara and the Dorim, they're really talking over there about what they call neder hanoah. Now, what I mean, neder hanoah? In other words, either a person makes a vow that he or she would make it, a woman that can make the same thing, okay? Will abstain from this. All right, let's say that I take a vow that I'm not going to eat any asparagus.
Easy one.
Okay. Now, what if a person would say, I take a vow that I'm not going to drink any wine? You understand? Mm-hmm. But that's another hadar, okay? That person would be prohibited from wine. This is a normal rule, okay? Of course, then the question is, can you make a neder which goes contrary to a law in the Torah that you're not allowed to, okay? So that was the last issue that I brought. This will already bring into a problem, you know, what do you do with neder, making Kiddush, which after all is an integral part of the Shabbos.
Yeah, what is it not sitting down?
Right. I mean, the rest of the time you can do without it, but what are you going to do in this particular case? You understand? All right. So, right. So this is one category of a neder hadar, right? That, you know, things
isn't considered the wine.
That it's wine, you don't think grape juice.
Yeah, that's a good question. You see, is grape juice wine or not? Of course, we hold that it is simply because we want to make the bracha very priagofen over it, and you know, not everybody can take the alcohol that's in the regular wine. So therefore, we pass it that it's considered wine. But there are a few people who have their doubts about grape juice. At least they used to have. Until even Chassidus HaRadayim decided that grape juice is in the same category as wine for making a bracha. Okay. So this is one category, you know, of a neder hador. But another neder hador means, hey, I refuse to have anything to do with you. I won't say hello to you. I won't visit you. I don't want to do any business with you. Things like that. Or the other way around. I don't want you to do any business with me, and so on and so forth. You understand? So
you're making a neder for him.
Right. Okay. So these are nedarim that
spoken about. Okay, now what the Torah says, that it says, you know, that if you remember, you know, there are three different categories mentioned over there. A katan or katana is not even mentioned, but it goes without saying that no katan or katana who makes a vow, the vow has no validity whatever. Okay, because they're considered, you know, not mature enough to understand what they're doing. Okay? In the case of a na'ara, which we said is the category between 12 years and one day and 12 years and 6 months, right? Then, in that case, the father, if he hears his daughter make a vow and he feels that he doesn't want her to be bound by it, then in that case he can be mayfair, right? In other words, he can say that it's null and void as far as he's concerned. Okay? If it is a married woman, then the law is, if she makes a vow, then if the husband objects, and he has to state his objection immediately, then in that particular case he has the right to be mayfair again, you know, to cancel out a vow. But if he doesn't, then in that particular case, the vow stands, and she is bound by the vow that she took. So,
how about an unmarried woman over 12 and a half?
Any vow that she makes is automatically valid.
Yeah.
Automatically, yeah. Right. Because it's written over there, the Neder Almono Grusha, I mean, you know, they figured that normally women would be married pretty much by that date, but it wouldn't make any difference. The same category, the same law would apply. But it's written, Kol Asher Tidor Yakum Al Nafsha. In other words, whatever she vows automatically has validity because she is an independent person. And any girl who is 12 years, 6 months and one day, it's automatically a bogeris. She's an adult woman, and so she has the right, you know, to make her own vows, unless she gets married, and then the other rule applies, depending. Okay. Of course, lots of girls today who have reached the age of 12 and a half consider themselves grown women. Well, as parents, we know it's not quite the same situation as it was back in the old days. Okay. All right. Next ruling over there. Ish megaleach al nizirus aviv, v'ein isha megalachas al nizirus aviha. All right. Here the rule is as follows. Okay. A man can be bound by the Nazirus of his father. His father was a Nazir, okay? And what happened was that he passed away, but his son also undertook to be a Nazir. So the question is, in that particular case, can the son, when he has finished the term of Nazirus, use, let's say, the animals that the father had intended, you know, to use as the sacrifice that he was going to bring, and be yotze with what his father had already prepared before, or does he have to bring those things of his own and undergo them? So the answer is, we say, this is, he can use his father's. He doesn't have to take out of his own pocket in that particular case. All right. But at any rate, this is a halacha for him, but it does not have any validity as far as a woman is concerned. She does not shave her hair and so on and so forth. Okay. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan said, again, it's halacha, Ibn Ozeh. This is halacha. There's no law that says so, but this is a tradition. Ha'ish mekadesh is bito, v'ha'ish mekadesh is bito. All right. We learn in the word of the Torah that a father can betroth his daughter while she is a minor. Okay? He has the right. But a woman cannot betroth her daughter who is a minor. So again, why not? So this is a pasuk. The pasuk says, Ezviti nosati lo ishazer. I gave my daughter to this man. Okay.
She's not the daughter of the mother.
Hold it. You know, so I think about this pasuk, and I say, look, if you only quote this much, you can say that the woman should also be permitted. Why? Because the word nosati, I gave, right? It can be the subject of the pasuk, right? It can be masculine, it can be feminine. But the answer is, we have to know what's the rest of the pasuk. The pasuk begins by saying, the Omar Avi Hana'aroa El Haskenin, and the father of the maiden says to the elders of the town, Biti Nosati Lo Yishata. So because of that, because it says, the Omar Avi Hana'aroa, this is the reason why it says over here, right, that the father has the right to betroth his daughter who is a minor, but the woman does not.
Only okay. Until she's 12 and a half.
Yeah, right. From that point on, she's a Bulgarian. She has no right.
After that, he can't betroth her at all.
That's right. She has to make her own decisions as far as marriage is concerned.
Right.
Okay. Well, hopefully, she'll make the right decisions, we hope. Again, it's the same thing, except that here we're talking about, you know, the business of a man selling his daughter Oma as a maidservant, okay? So a man can do, he can sell his minor daughter as an Oma, as a maidservant, and then of course, according to the law of the Torah, and as the Chachamim explained, you know, in Kedushin and so on, that, you know, once she shows signs of puberty, then she goes free, unless what? Unless either the man who purchased her as an Amma or his son marries her. But if they do not marry her, then in that case she goes free, and she's entitled to all the benefits that anybody who is a former Eved or Shifcho, right, they get. They get, you know, all kinds of severance pay that they take with them. Okay? Again, where do we find the pasuk? So it says, let's say the pasuk is kiyimkar ish esbito, a man can sell his daughter for a number. We explain, you know, that in general, why did they sell? He wanted money, but also it was with the expectation that marriage would eventually result, even though she was a minor. But when, you know, she had reached the age where she could be married, then in that particular case, either the owner or his son would do it. But if not, then the Torah says, you know, the Yotzokin on main cause. She goes out free and she doesn't have to pay any money for redemption.
What if a man dies while his daughter is very young?
Yeah.
And the widow needs money.
Yeah. She doesn't have the right to sell her daughter as a mother. That's what they say over here. So Ish, but not
the
Ish.
Right.
All for not her aim, you see, they're not allowed. No.
The girl, the daughter,
but on the other hand, you know, pardon me?
The daughter, she's a minor, she can't do it voluntarily. She can't just say, I'm
no.
doing
no.
it.
No.
You mean indenture herself?
No.
Yes. Yeah.
Indenture herself?
No. She can't.
I mean, with the expectation
no.
that the guy will marry her.
Right. No, she cannot do it, not as long as she's a minor. No. But as we said, even the mother doesn't have that
no,
power, the power to do it.
She should marry her first, then she becomes a slave.
Yeah.
That's what
okay. Now we go to the grim case of a person who is condemned to skila.
Right.
Okay. In other words, his punishment for
stoning.
Is stoning.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Whatever crime involves stoning. So there, the law is that, you know, if a person, you know, is stoned, afterwards they take his body, the soliso salates, and they hang it on a tree. They hang it up for a few moments, and then they take it down, because they're not allowed to keep it up there. Because it's written, because it is like a curse unto God to see, you know, a person who has to be hanged. So, again, what is the rule? I mean, a man could be stoned, a woman could also be stoned, right?
Yeah.
But the rule is, right, ha'ish niskal orum, right, that the man is stoned naked. Actually, he's allowed to wear a loincloth, but that's it. Okay, the Ein Ha'isha, right, Niskelas Aruma, but the woman is not allowed to be. She has to wear,
right.
You know, like a shift, front and back in order to protect her modesty. Okay.
But they would hang a woman anyway.
Well, that itself is already a little bit questionable, all right?
He said no.
Huh?
He said no.
That's very questionable as to the hanging part, right. But that stoning would take place, yes, but they were talking actually the actual moment of stoning, okay?
They would stone a woman too.
Yes, yes, yeah. Yeah. Because it's written by Tama, right? What is the reason? So it says, Viragmu Oso, they shall stone him. So my Oso, what do you mean, him? Ilemo, if you mean Oso, well, Oso, he is to be stoned, but she is not to be stoned. Understand? So the hawk says, the pasuk says, "Vahotzei says Aisha who, or is Aisha he?" This is in the case, you know, people who entice others to commit idolatry. Okay, but the pasuk says specifically over there that you shall take out that man or that woman. So obviously the same rule applies. So then, what does it say over here? Oso. Elo Oso, in this particular case, is below Kisuso, without his garment, below Oso, below Kisuso, but not her, without her garment. Okay? Ha'ish Nisle. Okay, let's get back to the text. Ha'ish Nisle, Yevein Ish Nisle. Oh, this is the question that you asked. The man is, after the stoning, you know, put on a pole and hangs, literally. It doesn't mean they put a rope around him. What they do is they tie him over there to it, and then they take down.
They don't really hang anybody.
No, no. And, okay, but not the woman, okay? So that answers the question. And the woman is, you don't act that way with the woman. My Tama, because it's written, right, Omar Kro, the Pasuk says, Felisa Usa Leitz, right, it's so silver the Usa. All right. And finally, Ha'ish Nimha B'gnei V'so, V'en Ha'ish Nimkeres B'gnei V'so. We learned that if a man steals, okay, and then, of course, he has to repay, you know, he's caught, he has to repay to the person from whom he stole. And that's it, you know. And as we said before, you know, and, you know, then there's also, you know, like if he was a goyzel, and you have a sham gezeilus, he was being an osham also, you know, to atone for the sin. But the point is, the basic idea is restitution to the person. What happens if the person squandered all the money that he had and he doesn't have any more money left? Then in that case, the bezdin has the right to sell him as a slave. So he serves for 6 years, or until such time that he can pay off the debt, you know, the money that he owes the person that he stole from. So, the bezdin then has the right to sell a man, right? So ish nimhar b'gnevaso, but the yeno isha nimkeres b'gnevaso. But a woman cannot be sold for what, you know, for a debt. My tama, what is the reason? So makor, because the pasuk says v'nimkar b'gnevaso. And he shall be sold for his, you know, for what he has stolen. B'gnei v'so, v'lo b'gnei v'so. So with this, we finish the third parak, right? And next week, in Mitzvah Hashem, we'll start the parak of the Hoyanote. Okay? So, are we happy with 8 o'clock?
Yeah.
Good. Okay, good. Because, frankly, it means that you don't have to rush with supper, and so it gives us a little bit of extra time.
Okay. Well, we're now on the starting of Chapter 4.
Right. Yes, I shall next week. Okay. This evening we are about to begin the fourth parak of Sota, which we find on Chav Gimel, Amid Beis, bottom of the page. And tonight is the 14th of January, 1998. And we are ready to begin. All right. So, as a little introduction, the previous chapters, of course, dealt with cases where the husband had told his wife not to be secluded with a certain person whom he names, and of course, he did this before Bezdin and presence of witnesses and so on, who claimed that she was obviously, you know,
behaving herself not in the right way, and that's the reason why he came to the Beis Din in order to get an official complaint against her, right? And then when she defied his warning and she secluded herself, so at this particular point, this is what leads to the problem of either drinking the Mayim HaMa'orim in order to prove her innocence, or else it would be that she has to lose her ksuba. So we were dealing in the previous chapters, as I said, in the case of where man and woman, you know, were married and living together as husband and wife. The Mishnah now begins in the fourth perek with cases which are not quite exactly the same situation. Mishnah begins by saying, Arusa v'shomeres yovam lo shosos v'lo notlos kesuba. Okay. First of all, who is an arusa? A betrothed woman. Of course, the answer is that he gave her kiddushin. He said harayat bekadeshusli, or whatever the equivalent expression was, because the word kiddushin, they have a few other expressions which are tantamount to saying the same thing. Okay, so that from this particular point, she is now his wife, but she has not yet begun living together with him. That comes only when they have nisuyin, okay? So, therefore, she is a wife and yet not a wife. Now, what happens if, after he gave a kiddushin, the report reached him, you know, that she wasn't behaving herself, that she was fooling around with somebody, and he gives her warning, all right? In other words, this is what we call Mekana, you know, he gives her the warning, you know, that she should not seclude herself with so-and-so. This is case number one. Case number two is Shomeres Yovam. The Shomeres Yovam, as we've explained many a time, this refers to the fact that if a man dies and he's childless, right, and he has a brother, then we know that the brother, who technically is called in Hebrew the Yovam, that he is supposed to marry the widow. And part of the reason why he has to marry the widow is in order the Hokim Shem Hameis and so on, Nachlaso, in other words, that the name of the dead brother should still be recorded. And of course, if a child is born, then in that particular case, the child will inherit the dead brother's estate. Okay. So, again, she is and she isn't married yet. Why is she is and she isn't? Because technically, when the husband died, she is already, as we said, she has a zika. In other words, she has a bond, or bound, whatever you want to say, right? She's bound to the, you know, to her brother-in-law, okay? And this has nothing to do, you know, with the fact whether there was any formal declaration or anything like that, but automatically she becomes bound to him until such time that either he marries her or or they have the ceremony of chalitza in order to free her from the obligation of being bound to him. Okay? Now, as we said then just a moment ago, in both of these cases, she is sort of a married woman, and yet at the same time she has not yet begun to live together with the man in this particular case. So if that's the case, the question is, if he warns her that she should not have anything to do with so and so, then in that case, what should be the disposition? Does she have to go through the whole ceremony of going to Yerushalayim, drinking the Mayim HaMa'orim in order to prove her innocence, or not? So here, the Mishnah gives a ruling. And what is the ruling? The ruling is, lo shosos, they do not drink the Mayim HaMa'orim. In other words, this whole ceremony is, you know, is dispensed with, but at the same time, velo notlas kesuba. On the other hand, they do not collect the kesuba. Now,
does this automatically imply that she's guilty?
No.
If she,
well, no. Not exactly. Let's take a look at the Rashi for a minute, okay? All right. Rashi explains, first of all, Arusa, you know, the betrothed woman, Shekine lo Oris, where the guy, you know, who is engaged to her, who betrothed her, you know, he warns her not to fool around with so-and-so, okay? So, what is the rule over the Shemeres Yavon, where the same thing happens, Shekidei Lo Yavon, where the brother-in-law also warned her, you know, don't have anything to do with so-and-so? So, what is the disposition? So he said, you know, they do not drink the Mayim Aron, but at the same time, Velo Notlas Kesuba, nor do they collect the Kesuba. Now the question is, why shouldn't they collect the Kesuba, right? So he says, Shehi Gormo Le'esor Atzmo Alav, because she is the one who forced this issue by, you know, bringing on that she now becomes prohibited to the man who has given her the warning. In other words, the husband, in the case of the Oris, as we said.
The husband died.
No, we're dealing with two different cases, okay? The Oris is the guy who betroths a woman, okay? But as I said, they haven't begun living together yet as husband and wife, okay? Yeah, oh, of course. I mean, it's part of the Kiddushin, okay, you asked the logical question. Yeah, it's part of the Kiddushin. He, you know, has to say Harayat Mekudeshesli, right? And he also has to give her a Kesuba. Because what would happen if he would die before actually he began living as husband and wife together? Then in that particular case, she collects. And what would happen if he changes his mind that he doesn't want her after all?
She collects.
So he has to give her a get, and she collects. Okay? But here, we're not dealing with a case, you know, that's as simple as what I said. We're dealing with a case where he didn't like her behavior after he had already become engaged to her, after he had already become betrothed to her. I don't like the word engaged because, you know, it doesn't give quite the same context, okay? He's betrothed to her, and he sees that, you know, she's secluding herself with a guy, so he gives her a warning, right? So what Rashi is bringing out is the fact that it was through her own action, Shehi Garba, right? She was the reason, she was the cause, Le'esarat Smolov, to become prohibited to him. Because one of the things is, if he suspects her, and he warns her, right? Then in that case, is he permitted to have relations with her?
No,
it's not allowed to have it, because we already learned if he goes ahead and he does it, then in that particular case, she doesn't drink, and as we'll see, they reiterate again over here, then in that case, she collects exhibit, because in that case, whose fault is it? It's his fault.
Excuse me, where does it imply that he warned her? Where does that come out in the Mishnah?
The answer is that it would not be over here at this particular point in Sota if it weren't for the fact, you know, that we're still continuing the story.
But you're still assuming that...
Right, absolutely.
You're assuming that...
That he warned her, yeah. If he never gave her any warning, then in that case it doesn't mean anything. Then certainly, if he doesn't like her anymore, give her a get and give her a kesuba.
There's nothing in the Mishnah that says that she was warned.
The Mishnah doesn't say so. It's implicit. Simplicity in the situation, because this follows immediately upon what we've been having all along about what happens with the Beis Din, with the drink of the Mayim Aharim, etc., 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 right? And of course, previously we learned, you know, that there are cases under which, you know, she refuses to drink the Mayim Aharim, then in that particular case, she loses her ksuba, naturally. She can no longer live with him, she loses her ksuba, and so on, okay? So here we have a continuation, except as I said, the difference here is that she never actually lived with the man yet as husband and wife. This is the difference, okay?
She's a maiden still.
Well, presumably. it's possible. I mean, that, you know.
But I still don't understand how they consider her guilty at this particular point.
What is she guilty of?
What is she guilty of?
She is guilty of, after he warned her, before a Besdin, don't have anything to do with this guy, because his suspicions were aroused, right? So he went through the business of going to the Besdin and claiming, you know, he has witnesses.
She's already gone through the business.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then that's implied.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, right, it's implied.
Exactly the same position as Sota, except that she had never lived with
him. I see, that's
right. Right.
They wouldn't say Lo Shota.
Right. Exactly, she doesn't drink, right. Why doesn't she drink? Okay, why doesn't she drink? So we'll see, the reason is because she hasn't yet lived together with him as, you know, husband and wife. But nevertheless, Notlas Kesuba, why, says Rashi? Because she is the reason why she has made herself, first of all, also to him, that is to the man, because the minute he says to her that you're not to seclude yourself with this man, right? And he's done so before the Beis Din and so on, you understand? Then in that particular case, if she goes and she defies him, then she is the reason why she deserves to lose the ksuba, because she conducted herself, you know, in a manner which was contrary to the man who's destined to be her husband. His wish. Okay? Shanistra Acha Kinui, right? It happened after he had already given the warning. This is Kinui, right? The Miknuya, right? The Isser lo imid, right? And he says that the Isser is not diminished, okay? And the Gemara will explain. Okay. Now, what about the case of Shomeres Yovam? Because remember, that's the case of the woman who her husband died, right? She is automatically bound to the Yovam, to her brother-in-law, and something has to be done in her case, either one or the other. So what does Rashi say over here? He says that Shomeres Yovam, Shezinso, what happened if she committed adultery? In other words, instead of waiting, you know, to dispose, I mean, she went and she had relations, right, with another man. So Muteres Liyavoma, in that particular case, this is something that we had before. She is, we're not talking over here, incidentally, that, you know, he had already given her warning. This has not happened. But let's say that in the interim, between the time that she lost her husband and the time that she should have, you know, married this man in one way or another, either married or get chalitza, right? And she's in so, and she committed adultery, then Muteres Liyavoma, right? She is permitted to her brother-in-law. Nehi de Muteres, right? So, inasmuch as she is permitted, but Mihu, nevertheless, he says, Lo boi le minsav isha zona. Nevertheless, the man should not marry a woman who is considered an adulterous woman. Even though technically she might be permitted to him, but a person should not marry such a woman. Nehi hifsida. And she, what did she do? She lost the rights to the kasuba, right? The Yosheves Tachtov, Akosa Badabe. In that, you know, she's still waiting for him. And, as we said, after, you know, he noticed that something was wrong, then he gave her the warning and everything else. If he had not given her the warning, then it would be a different story. But once he warns her, and this happens in that case, what happens? So she loses her ksuba. She does not drink the Mayim Hamorim, because technically she was not his full wife as yet. But at the same time, she loses the ksuba for it. All right. Now, how do they derive it? This is the question. How do they derive it from the Torah? So the answer is, they only derive it because Smitten Koben Finger, they find the drash. Okay? What is the drash? The drash is Shenemar. It says, Asher Tisteh Isho Tachas Isha. Right? At the beginning of the parak about Soto, it says, you know, a woman, right? Or a man, actually, it says Ish, right? Asher Tista Isha, whose wife, you know, becomes, you know, literally turns aside, in other words, she sins, right? Tachas Isha, while she is married to this man, right? So it says, Prot, this excludes what? La Arusa. It excludes the woman who is betrothed but has not yet lived what? Tachas Isha, in other words, together with her husband. And also it excludes Shomeres Yovam, because she too has not yet really begun living together with the other man. If she begins living with him, then in that case she's a married woman in every respect. No.
Oh, yeah.
No, she's a married woman, never expect. But if she hasn't yet begun living together with him, then she's still in the category of Shomeres Yovam. She's still waiting for something to be done with the state. Okay. So that's the reason why the two of them are compared. But nevertheless, we'll see in a moment that, you know, some of the authorities, they feel that you should separate one case from another and don't treat them exactly alike, even though the Mishnah here makes a blanket statement that both of them get the same treatment. Okay? Now, while we're talking about a list of people, a list of situations, would be a better way to put it, right, where the man and the wife, then the man gives her kinui, in other words, he gave her all this warning and everything, as we said, going through the whole process, right? But there's something in the marital relation where, again, she's not fully his wife. So this is what we now have, another list. All right. First of all, Albonel the Kohen Gadol. All right. We know that the Kohen Gadol is prohibited from marrying a widow. Okay? Kohen Gadol only has this prohibition. Let's say he defied the ruling and he married a widow, right? And then afterwards he becomes suspicious of her. Then what is to happen? So in that case, as we would say, it's going to be a case of, lo shosis or lo doitlos. Similar idea, okay? Another case would be chalutza.
That's the widow of a Kohen Gadol?
Not the widow of a Kohen Gadol. A Kohen Gadol who decides and he marries a widow.
Oh, I see.
We have to review again things that we learned in the Gemara, particularly in Kedushim, but we also have the Marcus and so on. I mean, if you remember that we had different categories, right? That you have prohibited marriages, arroyos.
Right.
In other words, this is where the blood relations, or it's extended, but it still has something to do with family. Okay? Where a man is prohibited from marrying a woman, or he's permitted from having a relation, but he's not allowed to marry her. Such a marriage is not a marriage. Okay? If a man marries his sister, is it a marriage? The answer is, of course not. It's not a marriage. It's an erva. It's something which the Torah specifically says, is considered, in that category, which it's not a marriage.
Prohibited.
Okay. Prohibited. Right. Then we have another category, and that's the category of a lav. Lav means the Torah says, don't do this, don't do that, and so on. But we learned that in the case of, that chai ve lavin, that people, in other words, who are guilty of violating a lav, paying to marriage, nevertheless, kedushin tofsim. In other words, there is a certain validity in their marriage, and the marriage has to then be dissolved by a get, because technically they're not allowed to live together. What they did between the time that
they got married,
he married her and he gave her a divorce, obviously consequences could happen, right? But at any rate, this is what the procedure should be. Okay, so the Torah says that a Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry an almona, right? The Torah says that a Kohen, that's the next one, right, is not allowed, right, Gerusha v'chalutza, the Kohen Hedyot, is not allowed to marry a Gerusha,
a divorcee.
The rabbis extended it also to include a chalutza, in other words, a woman who had received chalitza from her brother-in-law, but it's sort of tantamount, it's something like a divorce. That's the idea, right? Now, of course, they also have others. I mean, a zoina. In other words, a woman has, she behaves in, a very...
poor reputation.
Right, very so, exactly. A woman of ill repute, okay? So obviously, it's not allowed to marry her either, okay? And who else? Then we have the case, the al-chalus of the Kohen Hedyot. Kohen Hedyot means any ordinary coin, in other words, a coin other than Kohen Gadol. Okay. Word hediot, of course, comes from the Greek word idiotes. But you see, we think immediately the word idiotes, then we refer to the word idiot, which is true. But it doesn't mean necessarily that it becomes an idiot. The original meaning of the word is simply like a private individual. That's all that it meant. Okay. Yeah. Now, how about Mamzeres and the Sinu Yisrael? Okay? The law that we learned is that an ordinary Israelite, who is he prevented, who is he not supposed to marry? So the answer is, first of all, a woman who is a Mamzeres, because a Mamzer or a Mamzeres is not allowed to marry Bikal Hashem, in other words, to marry someone who is a full-fledged
Jew,
right? So then he went and he married a Mamzeres, right? And then afterwards he decides that, you know, he's suspicious of her and he goes through this procedure, etc., right? He's Mekaneher, as we said, okay? Or Nesina, this, if you remember, the Nesinim, they were the people who were the Givonim in the days of Joshua. They disguised themselves. They came to Joshua. They told him they came from a far land, and you know, they wanted to make a treaty with them and so on. So in the end, you know, Joshua was not allowed to deal with them as he dealt with the other Canaanites, right? But what he did is that he made them into like second-class citizens. Okay, they were supposed to be chot ve'etzim and shoa ve'mayim. In other words, they were to draw. They were supposed to chop wood and draw water and so. In other words, they were reduced to sort of like a menial category.
Sure.
And as far as the yichus is concerned, remember we had a Gemara in the last chapter of the Kiddushin which dealt with asura yichusim. There were 10 degrees of yichus, right?
Yeah.
And you know, we spoke about, you know, who came down from Babylonia and so on and so forth. Okay, so the Nesino, they you know, they were people who were in a lower status, and full Israelite is not supposed to
marry
to lower himself to marrying them. Okay, they could marry each other, that's perfectly all right, but they were prohibited from marrying Israel. To continue, the Nesinim, whether male or female, okay, Nesin or Nesinor, as mentioned over here, they, as I said, were in an inferior social status. They had an inferior yichus, okay? But likewise, the Eved Kenani or the Shivcho Kenanis also had an inferior status. Now, I'm not talking about Eved Ivri.
Oh.
Or a Shivcho Ivriyah. The Eved Ivri is somebody who is a full-fledged Jew, right?
Yeah.
But because either he was a ganav and couldn't repay, so the Beis Din sold him as a slave, or he was so poor that he decided he might just as well sell his services as a slave for a certain period of years, and then the Bala Boss will take him under his wing and take care of him and his family and so on. And then at the end, you know, he goes out with a nice severance pay. Okay? Hane Taniklo. Okay. So he is a full-fledged Jew. During the time that he's an Eved, and in that particular case, you know, there's certain things that he is absolved from doing because he has to devote his services to his master. Okay? But how about the Eved Kenani or the Shivcho Kenanis? In other words, these are people who were originally non-Jews and they became slaves of Jews, right? Or their offspring, okay? Yes. Let me just finish, okay? In their case, they are still Jews because what is the din? The din is that when they come into a Jewish household, then, right, they have to be converted, they have to be tefilled in the mikveh. And in case of a male, they also have to have, of course, a bris beforehand and so on, so that, you know, they are Jews and they live by all the restrictions of Jewish law, except for those things that mitzvahs asay she'es ban groma, things which are dependent upon time and they're, you know, affirmative mitzvahs, so from that they are excluded. Okay.
Like
but,
women.
Huh?
Like women.
Yeah. Of course, I mean, you know, it's very easy to make a comparison, but nevertheless, it's also not true 100%, okay? All right. Because there are cases where it's not true. All right. But their social status, as far as yichus for marriage is concerned, is an inferior one. So that a person who is Yisrael, not only is he not allowed to marry a Nesin or a Nesinor, he's not allowed to marry a Mamzer or a Mamzeres, but also he's not allowed to marry an Eved or a Shivcho, and so on. They can marry each other, but they cannot marry with somebody who is Israel, because this is a diminution of their status. Okay. All right. Listen, today we don't know about these things. The only problem that we have is with mamzer and mamzeres. That we do have. But who is in the sin, or who is the...
you're not implying that...
Or who is the devil? I mean...
The person who converts as an imperial yuchis. Yeah.
These people have.
Yeah, the Canaanite.
Right. But anybody other than that, if he converts or she converts, then in that particular case, they are fully Jewish, okay. Except what? If she is a woman, she's not allowed to marry a Kohen.
That's fine.
She falls in the same category as the Gerusha and the Chalitza. Okay?
Daughter of
a
convert.
The daughter of a convert? That's already a question. Yeah. The liberal view is, frankly, that you know, she can marry to anybody. You know, there's a difference in the machlekes about that, but nevertheless, near Firenzich, as we would say,
liberal.
That she's allowed to marry. Okay. Of course, even as you know, this Gemara that we learned in Brachas, for example, that Sancheirav came and he mixed up all the goyim, so that we don't know anymore who's a Canaanite and who's an Egyptian and who's an Ammoni and so on and so forth. We don't know these things anymore. So all converts fall in the same category.
We okay. Assume that they're all
right. Okay, so. What is the rule? Yes, the Bas Yisrael Amamzer, the same way, you know, a Jewish. The sin of the Yisrael, the Bas Yisrael Amamzer, right? Bas Yisrael, right. And the daughter of an Israelite who is married to Amamzer or to the sin of the sin. In any case, what is the rule? The rule is what we had a few moments ago. It's Lo Shosos, Lo Notlos Kesuba. They neither drink the Mayim Hamorim if, you know, the husband suspects them. Nor can they collect on the ksuba, because in the final analysis, as we said before, they brought it upon themselves by behaving in such a way that in spite of being warned, they still defied, you know, the husband. So in that case, okay. So therefore, that's why they lose the ksuba. V'yelu lo shoses lo donos ksuba. Now we have another group of people. Also, what is the general rule? They do not drink the Mayim Hamorim, right? Nor do they collect a ksuba. Case number one. Ho'omeres Tameya Ani. This we had before, frankly, but here it's restated again in order to give a complete picture of it. If a woman says, you know, in the course of, you know, this whole process, she says, look, I admit it, right, to Me'ani. I really did commit adultery and so on. Then in that particular case, we do not give it to Mayim Hamorim, because she's already said, I mean, remember what we said a few chapters back, that the Mayim Hamorim were there in order to be able to justify the women who are innocent.
Right.
But if a woman says to Me'ani, she's already admitted that she's guilty. And if she does that, then what is the Mayim Hamorim going to prove? So, therefore, we don't give a Mayim Hamorim. But what about Ksuba? She forfeits the Ksuba. That's all. Okay?
Well, she admits her guilt, though.
Yeah, she admits her guilt, so she forfeits the Ksuba. Okay. So that's case number one. V'shebo lo edim shetameya. Case number two. Witnesses come and they say, Shetaka secluded herself after being warned and everything else, and she was there a certain amount of time where we can understand that hanky-panky took place and so on. So in that particular case, same category. Okay? Okay, the Homeres Eni Shosa, or she says, I don't want to drink the Mayim Hamorim. Now here she's not admitting that she's guilty, but by the same token, she also doesn't want to drink the Mayim Hamorim. So we say to her, either drink and prove your innocence, or don't drink, but at the same time, you forfeit the Kesuba. Okay? So that's that category. Now, it would be nice if we had punctuation over here, which we don't have. And so, at this point, I would have put a period, because now the next category is a different situation. Omar Bala, what if the husband says, Eini Mashka, I don't want her to drink the Mayim HaMa'orim. Okay? Or the She'ebal or Bo Leho Baderech. Or while on the way to Yerushalayim in order to prove either the guilt or the innocence, they stop off at a hotel and they sleep together. Okay? So, in that particular case, what is the din? The din is not los kisuba, but los shosos. Then in that case, the women collect the kisuba,
and
they don't drink the maimorim. Because in this case, who was the one who caused this to happen? Was the husband. He said either I don't want her to drink, or he did something after being warned that he has to stay apart from her, abstain, and he went and he had relations with her. Right. Okay. Now, next case. Meisu ba'alehen ad shalei shasu. What happens in a case where the guy goes and he warns his wife, right? And before they can go ahead with the ganze ceremony of the Mayim HaMa'orim, he dies on her. Okay? So here there's a difference of opinion as to what happens at this point. They say not los kisuba velo shosos. Very logical in my opinion, by the way. They say if a husband dies before they went through with it, then in that particular case she collects her kisuba and she doesn't drink.
Absolutely, I agree with
it's
that.
Logical, right? And we always accuse Beis Shammai of being the strict guys, the machmirim, right? Whereas Beis Hillel is They're the liberal people, right? Yeah. But you'll see that here, Beis Hillel is not as liberal as Beis Shammai. Beis Hillel omrim, o shosos, o lo notlots kesubosan. Beis Hillel says, if the husband dies, but, you know, the process has already been put into effect, you know, and so on and so forth, then the woman has to either put up or shut up. In other words, she has to either drink the Mayim HaMa'orim, right? Or she has to forfeit the kesubah. So, how it comes about that Beis Hillel in this particular case is more machmir, I would say, than Beis Shammai, I don't know, but you know, it goes to show you that you can't generalize. People generalize always, you know, that Beis Shammai, they were the very strict guys and so on and so forth, and Beis Hillel, you know, they were the nice liberals and so on. And, you know, of course, we know that the general rule is that we follow the rulings of Beis Hillel. Well, believe it or not, even in this particular case, the actual halacha follows Beis Hillel.
Beis Hillel.
They do, right. Why? Well, we'll have to see later on when we come to a further discussion in the Gemara upon the text of the Mishnah. Okay? Now, Mu'beres Chavero, Umeinekes Chavero. Okay? Here we have another case. First one, Mu'beres Chavero. She is pregnant from beforehand by somebody else. Okay?
Oh boy.
And he marries her, even though she is pregnant. Now, technically, a man should not marry a woman who is pregnant by another man.
Technically.
Yeah, technically you should not. Okay? As I say, it's a technical thing. Okay? It's not allowed to marry her. All right. So let's say that he violated this technicality by marrying her, even though she was pregnant by another man. Okay? Or the other case that they now mention. Okay? Which is Meinekes Chadero. She has a child. She's nursing this child. Naturally, this child is by another man. It's not by him. Okay? But he, instead of waiting, according to the law, he should have waited 24 months from the time that the child was born beforehand. Why? Because in those days, women would nurse children for 2 years. Mm. This was the practice, okay? So that, therefore, the fear was that if he married her prior to that time, then in that case, she would become pregnant. And if she became pregnant, she wouldn't have enough milk in order to nurse her child. Okay? So that this is the reason why he's supposed to wait for 2 years prior to marrying her, because by that time the child would be weaned, and then, you know, if he marries her and she has a child, so that's not going to affect the first child. Okay, this is the basic reason why. All right. So in this particular case, what is again the rule? So again, the answer is leishoisais v'loy neitles kesuba. Right? They do not drink, nor do they collect the kesuba. And whose opinion this is? Well, this time it's not the opinion of, you know, Stam or Beis Hillel or somebody, but it's Divrei Rabbi Meir. This is the opinion of Rabbi Meir. But for Chachomim Omrim, the sages say, Yochohu lahafrisho lahachazir leyachazman. What the man could do is to simply separate himself from her for the time being. In other words, don't live together with her for the time being. And then after the prescribed period has happened, he can then resume living together with her. Well, we're talking about where he went and he married her in spite of the fact that he should have waited. That's what we're talking about, right?
I know, but what if I know what you mean.
Yeah.
What if a man's already married and he's got a child? So
No. If it's his own child, we're not talking about that. It says chavero. This is the result of a union with another man, not with him.
You're saying that
No, not at all. That's not the din. Din is only in reference from another person. Okay? No, I mean, look, a husband and wife are living together. Obviously, they're going to have relations with each other. There's no restriction on that. And if she becomes pregnant again after a year, whatever it may be, that's what happens. And so we're not talking about that. We're only talking about if it's chavero, somebody else. It's not him. Not him, okay? So I'm explaining to you why this happens, okay? This is the basic reason why.
Are we talking about a Kohen in this case?
Yeah.
Are we talking about a Kohen?
As far as a Kohen is concerned.
Are we talking about a Kohen in this case?
No, we're talking about any man.
Then maybe she's a Garusha. Maybe she's a widow.
So?
And she has a child.
Okay, all right. No. I'm not saying no.
So?
If she's a Garusha and she has a child, so, in that particular case, the same rule would apply. Okay? The same rule would apply. Now, I'm not saying that the Zmana Zeh, that today we are exactly, you know, following what the Mishnah has to say over here. You understand?
I understand.
Okay, first of all, this
is... be logical about it.
It's Rabbi Meir's opinion. Sadas Yochid in this particular case. In other words, it's the opinion of one sage, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Very important one, but nevertheless, if it's not the opinion of the majority of the rabbis, then, it doesn't have the same validity, okay?
Right.
But.
It seems to me that if there is kind of a restriction on somebody because they're worried about the health of the child, certainly they have to see what's done ordinarily.
Okay, look, you are carrying it to an extreme. I'm sorry to say, carrying it to an extreme. We're talking about where this was a result of a relationship that she had with another man, not with her own husband, okay? All right, so if they were married and they want to have normal relations, a husband and wife, as a husband and wife should, you see. So it's not the same story. It's a prohibited relationship, although it's only a temporary prohibited relationship. When the time has come, in the case of the woman, you know, let's say she was pregnant and she gave birth, then after that, you know, it's a different story, although frankly he should wait, until the child would be weaned, you understand? He should wait in that particular case. But nevertheless, I'm not saying that we hold today from this ruling, okay? But nevertheless, here is the text, and we have to understand, what does the text say?
Uh-huh.
And we have to understand, does this represent the view of the Chachamim, or does this represent the view only of one Chacham? You understand? In this case, that's why it says, Divrei Rabbi Meir. Okay? By Chacham over here, I don't mean a wise guy. I mean, you know, a scholar, okay? Talmud Chacham, okay? So Chachamim Omrim, they say, no, he says, Yochal hu lahafrisho lahachazir lahachazman. In other words, he could wait the prescribed amount of time, and then after that, he could take her back and, you know, resume living together with her. Okay? All right. Now, another case. Ayalonis. Uzakeno, Vishenu Uyalele. Here we have three different categories, again, of women who are not capable of conceiving and having children. The first case is Ayalonis. Question is, what is Ayalonis? Well, it would seem from the Gemara and Yevamos that this implies a woman who is very immature as far as her sexual development is concerned. Whatever we associate, you know, with signs of puberty and so on are lacking in her. Okay? As somebody suggested, maybe she has an overdose of male hormones in her system.
Could be. What?
It's possible.
Whatever.
Okay? So she's an Ayalonis. Man technically is not supposed to marry an Ayalonis. Technically. Again, we're talking about technicalities. Why? Because a man has a mitzvah of what? Piyuv Arivyon. He has the mitzvah, right, of multiplying and being fruitful. Okay? And with an Ayalonis, he will not be able to have children. Okay. Zekeno, this is a woman, of course, who is an elderly woman. So if he has not yet fulfilled the mitzvah period of Arivya, so in that case, he shouldn't marry a woman who is an old woman. Not talking about